Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 29th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by iStock Photo, the web's original source for stunning and affordable photos, media, and design elements to help you get creative with your website, print materials, presentations, blogs, and more. Check out their special offer at iStockPhoto.com/TechNews2011. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
That's it. Actually, that's not it. We have Chad Johnson running the board today because Jason Howell's car broke down.
Oh, my God, Chad!
So hopefully Jason will be back. But thank you, Chad, for filling in. And thanks to our guest for canceling. Appreciate that. giving us a chance to grow closer.
Closer.
Yeah.
Let's get to know each other. Yeah, who are you people?
If you were going to be a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
If you were going to be a group messaging service to replace SMS, what kind of group messaging service
I'd
to replace
Beluga.
SMS would you be? Yeah?
So I would be bought.
There is no Beluga anymore.
Yeah, that's
Facebook.
Right. You'd be gone.
I wanted to be bought out. That was the thing.
You don't get rich.
Well, I'm a sellout.
If you picked Beluga, you'd become Facebook Messenger, which is a pretty good
one
to pick.
Sure. All right. Not a bad choice. Samsung is going to launch a new group messaging service, because we needed another one, at IFA in Berlin and roll it out slowly over the month of September in over 120 countries. Across 62 languages. So this is a widespread effort. Samsung says Android and BlackBerry will have apps for their new thing called ChatOn. There's also a picture of an iOS version running in an iPhone on their materials, so we can guess that they want to have an iOS version. It's kind of unclear whether they're promising one or not. According to SammyHub, they've told them they're going to have one for Bada. That's another smartphone OS that Samsung uses, and possibly a web client, so that you could just use it in a browser as well. And on top of that, feature phones will have access with limited functionality to the service. So even if you don't have a smartphone, you'd be able to use it. So this is much more widespread than previous attempts to replace SMS have been. It also, if you're using the smartphone version, gives you extra bonus things, not just group messaging, video and voice messages, calendar sharing, location sharing. There's a social network element to it with a Facebook-like wall full of posts and interaction ranks, animation messages. So, and this thing called the trunk, which is like file sharing, where you can throw files you want to share. So kind of a Dropbox type thing. I mean, they're throwing everything but the kitchen sink into this thing.
What I like about this is that it's aim is to reach as many users as possible. What I don't like about it is that it's still just another fragmenting of this whole let's replace SMS messaging with a system that everyone will use, because not everyone will use this. Some people are going to use iMessage. Some people are going to stick with Facebook Messenger. Some people are really loyal to BBM. And it's like, what I want is like the Adium of all of these messenger systems, where it's like, you're on AOL Instant Messenger, I don't really care, I use this all in one client. So if you're on Yahoo Messenger, it kind of reminds me of the old IM wars, where most people used to use AOL IM, and then there were a bunch of other companies that had their own, and then it became, well, this is too fragmented, we all just want to talk to each other.
Yeah, and then Trillion and Adium and
exactly.
Those came along to unify them.
It'd be nice if this chat on thing was like Adium, if you actually did have that ability. We don't know if it does that or not. We don't know if it's just a Samsung only
thing. No indication that it does.
If you need to have a Samsung ID or not, but I mean,
I'm pretty sure it's not, or else they would say, use any messenger service through us.
That'd be interesting.
That would be the selling point.
The other thing is, like, we've seen those pictures, it looks like it's on iOS or on an iPhone. It could be the web app, we don't know, because the web apps kind of look the same on an iPhone as it does everywhere else. I mean, I don't know if how friendly Samsung is going to be software-wise when it comes to being in the Apple Store at all. I mean, the Apple App Store. I can't say it right today.
That's why they don't want to confirm that they're coming to the iPhone.
They just have a graphic of it.
Apple might just say, like, no, replicates functionality.
Also, did
not
you see the Samsung device next to the iPhone? It was hard to tell the difference. No.
Were you confused?
I was slightly confused.
By the community design?
No, yeah. I'm just
well, but I mean, Apple allows other messenger services in their App Store. I mean, when iMessages comes out, are they going to start yanking people?
Good question.
I doubt it.
This is a great attempt. Because it goes farther than these other. The problem with services like GroupMe and Beluga is they were only available, at least to begin, on one platform. Mm-hmm. And then they were maybe available on two platforms, but not all platforms. This goes much farther and says, look, yeah, you might be using GroupMe, you might be using Beluga, you might be using, well, Facebook Messenger, but we are available everywhere. So likely all the people you want to talk to, if they sign up for chat on, will be available. And that was a problem with the other services, like, oh, well, my mom doesn't have access to it. Well, now mom will have access to it. So the question is, can Samsung convince everyone to sign up for this service when it's not open and it's not interacting with other services, but it is got the advantage that everybody can access it, or at least, you know, in a large majority of cases?
That's why I think arguably Facebook Messenger's got the best shot at this. Facebook introduced their app for even for feature phones. They have that now. So they have... they have the ability, even though they've broken out Messenger as a separate app for other smartphones, I think you can still access it in the Facebook app proper. So, I mean, like, if anybody has the reach, I think it's Facebook. I don't know how Samsung's going to convince everybody to say, hey, you who don't have a Samsung device, go get this application. It's a lot easier if everyone you know has a Samsung device. I mean, like in South Korea, I see this being very popular. If everyone has a Samsung device around there, you go, okay, yeah, you have this thing already built in.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think Facebook's got this locked up eventually.
I agree. I think Samsung has its work cut out for it in being the, this is the place you go if you want to message everybody. Facebook makes a lot more sense to me.
It makes sense, but people would be doing it already if that were the case. And I don't see people just don't see Facebook as a replacement for SMS. They see it as a different thing, and they're not using it that way. I'm not saying ChatOn will be any more successful, but I don't think Facebook's it. I think ChatOn has a better chance of doing it because it's specific, because people will see it as a particular thing.
I don't know about their marketing arm. I don't know if they're going to be able to reach enough different users.
That's the key,
you know,
right?
There is iMessage, there is BBM, and those people are pretty... Well, BBM users are very locked in. They don't want to move around there. And then iMessage is just locked to iOS devices anyway, so you're going to have that kind of, like, I don't know.
That's ChatOn's advantage and its problem, right?
Right.
Its advantage is we're not locked in, so you can be on all these platforms, but the disadvantage is well, but if I'm in this platform, I may be loyal
to convert other people
to that platform.
Difficult.
Yeah. Also at IFA, Samsung has already announced LTE variants of Galaxy S2 and Galaxy Tab 8.9. So the Galaxy S2 LTE has a big 4.5-inch Super AMOLED screen and an 8-megapixel camera. And the Galaxy Tab 8.9 LTE will be around 8.6 millimeters thin, weighs at 455 grams, and both devices feature a 1.5 gigahertz dual-core processor. So it looks like, you know, it looks like we're going to get a lot of product news out of IFA Berlin. Last year, there was a big Google talk from Eric Schmidt. And then there were a few announcements, but this year it looks like they're finally building momentum. It's becoming one of those Computex types things where you got to keep an eye on it. Eric Schmidt already did talk this weekend, actually. We mentioned he briefly on Friday. He was speaking at the Edinburgh International TV Festival and announced that Google TV would be coming to the UK and Europe. What we didn't know is that he had done a question and answer session where NPR's Andy Carvin asked him specifically about Google's real name policy and the policy that real identities could put people at risk. If you don't know Andy Carvin, he's covered a lot of the Middle East revolutions on Twitter. He's very familiar with, you know, having people who are using pseudonyms and being able to verify who they are without giving away their identity, so he mm-hmm. knows that they're a good source. And Eric Schmidt says, well, Google Plus is primarily an identity service, and people who are concerned about their safety or at risk shouldn't use Google Plus.
Yeah. He says it's like the classic, it's optional. No one's forcing you to use the service.
Yeah, no one's
doesn't
making
work for you
use the internet
at
all.
You need a pseudonym. You can go somewhere else.
Well, I mean, if other groups, if you want to put together some kind of resistance, I don't know, if you were, I don't know, maybe like a hacker group, wouldn't you be okay with using different names and not using particular services? You want a more secure service anyway? Like, if you want to use Google Plus, sure, it locks into your Google account and everything, but there's other ways to organize. So, I mean, the fact that Eric Schmidt said this, it always sounds like, oh, Schmidt's lost his mind. He's saying, well, you don't have to use this, so heck with you guys. But there's other ways to organize. So why is this such a big deal anytime anybody says, this is an optional service, you don't have to use it? Why does everyone get upset about that?
Yeah, there's two things. One is the business analyst type is going to say, well, then you're stupid, Google, because you're missing out on a large number of people who would use this or would think, I want to use this as my primary way because I'm also going to be able to use it to organize and do whatever else it is that I do. You're taking away a function, and that may or may not be a smart thing.
For resistance and like rebel cases? I mean, this is really limited.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people think they're part of resistance, even if they're not part of something that you see on CNN. And so, the, you know, it's a marketing negative. But the other thing is to say, but what I want to use it, if I want to use it to organize some sort of resistance or some sort of protest, I want to organize it or get a message out, even more than just organize. I want to get that message out in the place that's most popular. And if Google Plus becomes the place that's most popular, as a lot of the technorati seem to think it's going to become, then I want the ability to do it, to use it safely.
And it just goes against the whole idea of Google. I mean, Google is supposed to be reaching as many people as possible. I mean, is Google saying, don't like the way that we set up Gmail, maybe you should just use Yahoo Mail? I mean, they never say things like that. So it's like, it just comes as a bit of a left field type of statement to make.
But if you're going to broadcast something, try to organize something, you can always set up a web page. You can set up, there's so many other things that you could do. I know that social networking is supposed to be great because you're supposed to be able to go, I'm going to invite all these people to this. But I mean, you can always do this already. You can
well, that was then why did Twitter, I mean, you're just asking, why is Twitter successful at all? Because you could already do everything you can do on Twitter before. It's the same thing.
I'm just saying, like, if you don't have access to this, it's not like there's no other alternative. There's so many other options out there. I mean, you could even build one using open source, like using Diaspora. I think that's how you say it.
But will it be as effective?
Probably not, no.
There you go. That's why people want to use Google Plus.
It's Google's best interest to be doing something like that. Oh, yeah, by the way, we were going to sponsor Revolution.
But that goes back to the business thing where people are saying, no, it is in your best interest to do it this way because you build more people into your system. And the more people you have, the more monetizing you can do because you can have more ads served on the pages.
So Rebel ads.
Yeah.
Well, the one other reason
they click
that a
on
lot of
things
people,
too. I mean, what? They're not people somehow.
No,
they don't count.
I'm just saying that I don't know if it makes or breaks a social network whether you embrace or decline.
I think a more interesting point than that even is the fact that he's saying it's not even a social network; it's an identity service.
That is something they've been saying a lot, though.
Vic Gundotra and Bradley Horowitz have not been saying that. They've been saying we want to accommodate people who need to use pseudonyms, but we want to do it in a responsible way. They've been speaking much more inclusively. Schmidt's like, "Man, go use something else. See you later. Get out of here, kid. You bother me." Rebels.
I think also many people have clung on to this as a reason to get upset because Google did not do a good job of explaining really well that real names were going to be a necessity before they started rolling out this beta, and a lot of people had access and were already starting to build up, in some cases, very successful networks with a lot of people following them. I mean, I know Dr. Kiki had of the Twit Network had this issue where she set up her profile and was excited about it and loved the social network, and they yanked her her profile completely after she had already put a lot of work into it. So,
I think what this reveals is that what Google doesn't want to admit, although Eric Schmidt just did, is that they are wanting to become an identity service in the strictest sense the way Facebook has. Facebook has become that thing that people use to log into services, to manage their contacts, to store all this information. And the reason Facebook provides that service is they can monetize the crap out of that. That's what they call the social graph. Google Plus is Google's way of getting that kind of information, organizing it, and being able to data mine and sell off of that. And to do that, you want people to use real names the way Facebook did. And I think Eric Schmidt was just being a little more honest about it than maybe we have seen.
He's less diplomatic in saying this stuff.
Is
he going into bomber territory at this point?
I don't think so. I think he's just not quite as touchy-feely maybe as maybe the press people would prefer. But, I mean, for example, he's getting a lot of flack also for saying virtually all the television manufacturers on their very high end will eventually adopt Google TV or perhaps one of the competitors that will emerge. But after he says Google TV, most everybody stops listening and says, oh, he said all the TV manufacturers are going to adopt Google TV. He just didn't phrase it
very well.
Yeah,
he did say that, but that's not what he said in context at all.
Yeah, exactly. So he could be a little wiser about how he phrases something in the world of taking people out of context, but
well, you know,
he's not saying
crazy
stuff.
You chop up someone's sentence in half, and I mean, it's not really Eric Schmidt's fault either.
It's not, but at the same time, you know, people are going to do that. So
people can be trained to speak in a way where they can't be taken out of context as easily.
He's probably pretty secure in his position.
That's why
he doesn't care if they put him out of context.
That may be it. Right?
Like, you know what? He'll tell the Google guys, you can search the news archives. We do search, you know, and you can find out that I didn't say that.
Yeah, but if everyone believes he said it, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because nobody's going to do the search.
And then all of a sudden he has this reputation as this crazy person who says crazy things.
Sadly, that's
outside of Google. Inside Google, they'll still know.
Amazon getting more speculation from Forrester. Forrester Research predicts that if the imaginary tablet that Amazon has never said they're going to do does come out, it will possibly sell millions of dollars if it's put at the imaginary price of $300 or fewer and be iPad's main competitor. In fact, they say the only credible iPad competitor in the market.
Wow. So,
is there any end?
It doesn't exist yet, right? No official confirmation. We've never heard anything.
I actually believe it's coming.
Well, yeah.
But this is crazy.
That it's going to be the only competitor. I mean, I think, Sarah, you were talking about this, that if they subsidize the cost with their media, they're fine. At $2.99, they'll be able to go out there, and they have the ecosystem to make it all up.
Could even go lower, or it would be nice. Well, I do think that, and we also have talked about this,
we talked about it Friday.
Amazon is obviously a very successful company. They do a lot of things right. The Kindle is a great example of something that a lot of people didn't really get, weren't sure that they believed in or not. And yes, they've dropped the Kindle price over time, so they know that will help people adopt new technology if the price starts coming down. But it's a real runaway hit. I mean, the Kindle has been a success. But then again, the Kindle was a success when it was a lot more expensive than it is now. So there's
And when there were hardly any other credible e-readers out there except for the Sony reader.
Right. Exactly. So it's not as if I don't think Amazon necessarily feels forced into giving away a tablet for half the price or less of the iPad. If it's good, then they might be able to stand on their own.
Well, considering how much bargaining power Amazon has, they probably could get a tablet at a pretty good deal when they want to actually build it. And the other thing is, by waiting this long to come out with a tablet, now the market's somewhat mature, people understand what they are. They're not like, oh, is it like an iPad? Sort of. They can figure that out versus trying to explain to people what an e-reader was, even with Sony out there, not exactly something that's like, oh, it's like a book. Yeah, and it costs like $360, and it comes with no books at the time. I mean, that's a hard sell. Now it's a lot easier. The market's very mature.
Actually, I thought the Kindle was an easy sell. Everybody had been, when can I read e-books? When am I going to get an e-book reader? And they said, here's your e-book reader. It's brilliant, and you don't have to plug it into your computer. You just buy it and start buying books.
I remember the complaints that the price was so high, and it came with no books.
Price was high, yeah.
That was very irritating.
Turned out to be fine. They sold a lot of them.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
They also dropped the price over time.
Well, but they sold a lot of them before they dropped the price.
That's true.
All right. Someday Amazon will actually probably weigh in on this and say whether they're coming out with a tablet or not. So until then, Forrester can make up all kinds of good advice for them. I actually think they're probably right about that target price if they want to sell
stuff. I think what Forrester is really saying is there is no Android competitor to the iPad right now, and hopefully Amazon will be the first.
Rep, I think that's right. Let's take a break and thank our sponsors at iStockPhoto. If you are making a website or even if you're doing print stuff, it's hard to find good quality royalty-free images out there on the internet. Believe me, I've spent decades trolling around trying to find stuff that doesn't break copyright rules, that doesn't lock me into paying royalties on sales or impressions or anything like that. iStockPhoto makes things a lot simpler. Their collection includes 9 million plus files, which make it huge. You've got a really good search engine in there. In fact, I forgot to tell you, Chad, to make sure that my screen was up. But if you have the screen, I just put out a book, and I'm looking for an image to go with it on a website that has the moon and the earth in it. I can press moon, earth in their search engine. Look at this. I get tons of search results, illustrations. You know, look at this video. They actually have videos on here if I wanted to embed a little video of somebody climbing around on the moon. And these are all available for under $2, sometimes as low as $1, depending on how many credits you buy. You buy some iStock credits, you spend the credits on the different photos you need, you put them up on your website, and you don't have to worry about royalties. It's a great place to find high-quality videos, illustrations, audio, flash components, and you can use them on your website. You can use them in print. They're the industry-leading search in finding photos. So try them out, iStockPhoto.com. A special offer for the audience, if you want to buy a bundle of 50 credits, if you think, you know what, I'm going to probably need around 50 of those sorts of assets, they'll give you 10% off the cost of the credits. So you'll get them cheaper than anybody else. Check it out at iStockPhoto.com/TechNews2011. If you're looking for royalty-free images, this is the place to go, iStockPhoto.com/TechNews2011. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. HP touchpad. The Holy Grail is putting Android on it, and the Cyanogen mod crew says they're that much closer. They've created a customized build of Android for mobile devices that works. They haven't got the touchscreen support running yet, so they had to do a remote control of it to move around and use the interface. But they did get it to boot. I think we're looking at the Linux boot there.
No, that's actually that's
is the touchpad, is that Cyanogen and mod?
Yeah,
okay.
And so the thing is that the headlines were screamed Android on touchpad, and then you watch the video, and then about 20 seconds in, the guy says touchscreen doesn't work.
Yeah.
Which got a lot of people upset. But
well,
it's one step.
The Cyanogen guys are like, look, you know, we had to do this step before we get to making everything work. So this is just showing that we're that much closer. People are really excited to have this, of course. But it's another step closer. And there is a similar team of developers working on porting the Linux operating system to A4 chips. That's the chip that runs the iPod Touch, the iPhone 4, the iPad. So you'd be able to run Linux and potentially run Android, because Android is a version of Linux. So they might be able to run a version of Android on the iPhone if you want.
I mean, there's old projects running Linux on iPods. You could do other alternative operating systems on an iPod. So this isn't that surprising to see. I mean, it's a popular device. Why not try to put Linux on there? Because you can do some real computing on there and actually do multitasking.
Well, yeah, it'd be nice to have multi-boot, too. That's another thing Cyanogen Mod is talking about, is they'd eventually like to make it so that you could boot into Android or WebOS or other operating systems on the touchpad.
Windows 8.
To make it even. Oh, that'd be pretty crazy. see how many you could fit on there. Facebook is getting rid of something else. They've been doing the Google thing a little bit, kind of shedding some experimental projects. Right. Now they're abandoning the deals market. This is the thing that competes with Living Social and Groupon.
So wait, this is not the check-in deals thing? Is that still going?
Right. No, that's a good point. They were very quick to point out to MSNBC that check-in deals are, quote, still an important part of the marketing solutions Facebook provides. So they're still testing check-in deals, and they're available in 12 countries. However, the odd thing about that is when they rolled out those new privacy changes, remember, last week?
Yep.
They retired Facebook check-in. So apparently, the check-in deals will now be part of the new geotagging system that is replacing Facebook check-in.
So it's kind of like shuffling some cards, throwing out a couple.
Well, but the whole thing about retiring check-ins is a little bit misleading,
yeah,
because they're just evolving it into something else.
They're making it less Foursquare-like.
Right. Okay. But as far as deals go, which was basically go to Facebook and get deals in your neighborhood and buy them like you would some sort of flash sale site or, you know, a Groupon type of thing, that was almost like, that's a whole other service that doesn't really fit into side Facebook, but fitting it in with checking in, especially since so many more people are using Facebook Mobile on a regular basis, that makes more sense. It's more of an incentive.
So
I never paid any attention to Facebook deals.
Instead of so the deals thing, the Living Social Groupon type thing, that's gone.
Okay.
What they have still is the kind of thing you had on Foursquare where you check in and it's like, hey, get 10% off if you're the mayor, or, you know, here's a coupon for a free ice cream cone or whatever.
Right.
That's still there, but they don't. Facebook Places no longer works the way Foursquare worked, where you're like, have to be at a place and then you find a list and you check in. What they're doing is you can geotag anything. You can geotag a post. You can geotag a picture. And so what they're saying is the check-in deals will now apply to that. So if you geotag a post, it'll give you a possibility for some kind of coupon or deal based on that location.
It's more like tagging an idea than tagging a place.
I don't know if that's going to work as well. But
starting to develop a headache here.
Well, you know, they're not the only people who are, you know, the whole idea of checking into places is, when you think about it, it's really narrow as far as the idea of checking. It's almost like thumbs upping something that you may be at later, or it's sort of a combination of PlanCast and Groupon and Foursquare, and I don't know. I kind of like the idea. Facebook Places and deals never really worked for me the way that they were. They just seemed like a me too type of a thing. We're a big company that's going to replicate what the little companies are doing and see if it catches on. Yeah, but some people are using it, but I think that they realized that another iteration might be more successful.
Oh, the mobile platform is the place where people are sinking the money in, though, no matter what you're doing with it. Bloomberg reporting that AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile will invest as much as $100 million in their ISIS mobile payment system. Remember, this is the system that's developing NFC, near-field communication, payment so that you could actually just wave your cell phone at a little pad when you check out, and it would just deduct it like a credit card. The amount they invest, the amount AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile are going to invest, will depend on how many merchants and banks sign up for this. All the major credit card companies are on board with ISIS. Google Wallet, big competitor here, only has Sprint, by the way. So this is another commitment from the carriers to say, you know what, we're sticking with ISIS, we're sticking with our own thing. It's not likely to start its services until mid-2012. And the interesting thing I thought about this report is that mobile payments are expected to generate as much as $670 billion by 2015. But of that, near-field communication is a modest $50 billion by 2014. I don't know why they give two different years here in the report, but it's still a small slice of $670 billion. So $100 million, yeah, it's a small percentage of $50 billion, but $50 billion is the entire NFC market. You're not even sure that ISIS is going to succeed, and you're throwing a lot of money into this thing. I have a feeling it's going to take a long time before NFC becomes something we use regularly, at least here in the U.S.
Well, this kind of technology has been around internationally doing quite well, but for the U.S. to understand what it is, I mean, I've seen like weird documentaries on like the shopping cart where people actually hire people to use them because nobody knew what they were at the time because this was an unusual concept. I would imagine
what
plants.
What documentaries
this
are
was
these?
On supermarkets. I don't even know why I was watching.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is I'm expecting people for AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, maybe even sending out plants, people trying them out, showing other people. Because, I mean, if you could imagine at a bar where there's like Bacardi people and there's all these other people like, oh, here's a drink that we love. I'm sure there's going to be people showing these things off in stores.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But I don't mean that. I mean, the kind of that plant way.
But
the thing is, it
doesn't matter. About, I mean, that is one piece. You're right. But it doesn't matter how many people you get familiar with it and get using it. If you have several different systems and different stores have different systems. So you walk in and you can buy with your iPhone in one store, but then you go to the next store, they're like, oh no, we're Google Wallet, you know. We don't support iOS. It's not like credit cards where, you know, some people take Visa, some people don't. But you can guess that most places that take credit cards take Visa, MasterCard,
but won't that probably
American
just
Express.
Be like on the front door now? It'll just say ISIS or it'll say...
Yeah, but it's going to be... What I'm saying is it's going to be much more fragmented than it is now.
I would imagine the point of sale devices would be much more... willing to accept all kinds of payments because when
no,
it comes
that's,
to...
No, that's the problem is you've got some merchants right. signing up you're, for one and some for another.
You're going to have to like get... Like if you're a small business,
you're
going
to have to carry six phones if you want to pay by near field communication.
Well, no, as if you want to pay. I'm just talking about the merchants will probably have everything you need right there.
Ah, no, that's what some of these studies
these are
the saying
is
ones. The merchants are only they're committing getting the merchants to commit to one system.
I don't. But I mean, maybe
exclusively.
Maybe because it'll be too fragmented, these companies are going to have to realize that they're going to have to be able to give merchants more than one choice
right.
to consumers. Like what Ayaz is saying is nobody's going to use any of this stuff if we're too confused.
Exactly. And a lot of the merchants won't use it because they're like, look, we're not going to sign up to pay you for your system
right.
if we're not going to have customers using it. So
I mean,
I'm
see
out.
ISIS and being like, okay, we're with Sears and we're with Walmart. Like that's a big deal. But like for the small business person, that's where they probably won't be exclusive deals.
You'll small business people are not going to sign up at all.
They're going to be very unhappy with this.
They're just going to say, you know what? We're fine with credit cards.
Cash only.
Credit cards and cash work just fine. Thank you.
What is this, like paper?
There are many restaurants I visit regularly that take cash only. They don't want anything to do with credit cards or ATM machines.
Fronts. They're fronts for crime.
I'm sure they are.
But they're tasty fronts.
But they taste really good pizza.
Yeah. Some of the best tasty restaurants are fronts. Don't hold that against them.
Good to know.
Real quickly before we get to the news fuse, thanks to Riddle who pointed this out on Reddit at r/geek making the rounds is this image from Hewlett-Packard Company circa 1956 to Dr. F. E. Terman, Office of the Provost, Stanford University, from William R. Hewlett of Hewlett-Packard Company saying, "Dear Fred, I have no personal knowledge of computers, nor does anyone in our organization have any appreciable knowledge. Sorry, we can't help you out in this regard." Now, this is at a point in Hewlett-Packard's history when they were a laboratory instruments manufacturer. So, of course, it's kind of unfair and taken out of context to the modern day. But I think the reason it's capturing everybody's attention right now is it's Bill Hewlett going, yeah, nobody in our organization knows anything about computers at a time when HP's like, let's sell off the computer part of the company.
That would have been a much more effective press release. That's how it should have been when they decide we're looking for strategic alternatives.
We're going back to this model. Where no one knows anything about computers.
I love the way it's worded, too. It's like, not only does William not really know what's going on, no one in this whole company knows what a computer is, okay? We can't help you.
Now, we are not 100% certain that this isn't Photoshopped either.
That's true.
So get your chuckles out while you can, but it may not be real.
I'll leave
it's still pretty funny.
Inside.
I have to believe.
It's possible. It's possible that he did that. On to the news fuse.
It's a silent news fuse.
Be careful visiting Google.com these days because it might not be Google.
What?
DigiNotar, based in the Netherlands, apparently issued a certificate for Google.com to a site that is not Google.com. Yesterday, someone reported on a Google support site that their browser issued a warning for the digital certificate when they attempted to log in to Gmail. This remind you of anything? We had the same problem with Komodo, with one of their resellers issuing improper certificates to somebody through an automatic purchase system. Looks like something similar may have happened again. With DigiNotar, just pointing out, once again, that the certificate system is not perfect and needs to be fixed.
Nokia just joined a very exclusive members-only club.
Did they get a jacket?
No, they got their website hacked.
Oh, that's not that exclusive.
No, actually, it's not. It's kind of happening to everybody these days. In particular, the Nokia Developer Forums had its database table accessed via an SQL injection attack. The usual information, email addresses, dates of birth, yada, yada, are believed to be compromised. I can't believe I just yada-yadded personal information. But it did.
Yeah,
no
whatever.
Group has taken responsibility for the hack yet, so one can only imagine.
Yes, they made it. They got hacked. Good for them. Digitimes is reporting that the iPhone 5 will have a not-so-giant screen at less than 4 inches. Earlier rumors put the iPhone 5 screen at about 4.2 inches, so keep your rumors straight. And if you want to get straight dope from Sprint about the iPhone, you can forget that, because Sprint has sent out a memo to its employees that instructs them to offer no comment to customers who ask about the iPhone.
So this is perfect fodder for 4chan. Just start sending people into Sprint stores asking about the iPhone. Google recently forfeited $500 million to the United States for Canadian pharmacy ads and AdWords. We talked about it on Tech News Today. Today, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Larry Page had personal knowledge of the ads. Wall Street Journal cites Rhode Island attorney Peter Naranja, who made these claims after investigating the emails. They also cite a source at the Department of Justice. Google hasn't made an official statement in response to this finding.
Samsung's announcing all kinds of things. That new Messenger service, new Galaxy S2s. We'll talk about it a little bit in the calendar. Even some news on the Galaxy Tab 10.1.
Oh, you mean the iPad 2?
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Except that they don't want to call it that.
Oh, right.
No, it's different. If you're in Australia, the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 will be launched no earlier than September 30th. But Samsung says it's agreed to delay the launch, but not because of any sort of injunction.
No.
It's just because we feel like it.
Yeah, they went
we
back
just wanted to delay it
today.
September 30th is a magical day, not a day before.
A judge for the Northern District of California says that a copyright holder can't sue a bunch of IP addresses, even if they're BitTorrenting the same copyrighted work, because they don't act in concert. Judge Joseph Sparrow also added that joining these claims as one lawsuit does not comport with the notions of fundamental fairness. This is somewhat good news for the owners of the 188 IP addresses, as they will be able to make their own defenses on why they decided to torrent Hard Drive Productions' Amateur Allure, Aaron.
I would like to hear 188 defenses of that. Not really. Samsung has made it incredibly clear that it has no interest in purchasing HP's PC business. We talked about that last week. They've done it twice. They've said absolutely not, no way, no uncertain terms, not going to buy the personal systems group from HP. Now there's another rumor popping up that Samsung may be interested in purchasing WebOS. Samsung has apparently recruited an ex-VP from HP already. That could be coincidental. But unlike last time, neither Samsung nor HP has made a comment about any potential deal. It's just Digitimes saying, oh yeah, they totally want to buy WebOS now.
Verizon may not be getting the Galaxy S2, but Boy Genius Report says Samsung is ready in the Droid Prime, complete with ice cream sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it didn't come up.
No,
I was hoping there'd be
Chad
had
to run the board.
Sandwich.
I couldn't send him to get ice cream sandwiches today.
All right. Well, we won't make that mistake again. Ice cream sandwich for an October launch exclusively on Verizon. Take that, every other carrier. The Droid Prime appears to be the new name of the Nexus Prime, so expect high-risk screen LTE in the fall.
Steven Zanosky is on a roll at the Building Windows 8 blog. This time he's showing off the future of Windows Explorer. Power users, sit down, because this might sound like bad news. The ribbon UI is loud and proud in Explorer. Zanosky even mentioned that even though Explorer will look different, Microsoft is committed to make it work for power users via keyboard shortcuts, and you'll still be able to customize it.
It's too loud, actually. I have a problem with that. Time for the randomizer.
Randomizer.
This would be the time when the randomizer thing would play. If it were cooperating.
Randomizer.
It's so random, we don't know when it's going to show up.
Exactly.
That's okay.
It just pops up when it wants to pop up.
It got us good today.
This video has taken the internet by storm today. You've probably run across it, but if you haven't, you're in for a treat. Two researchers from Cornell's Creative Machines Lab recently discovered that pitting two AI bots against one another creates a fabulous conversation. It's part of an event, the Loebner Prize competition in artificial intelligence. Listen to him talk.
That's good.
Are you good?
Yes, I am good. I just said I was.
No, you didn't. I said I was.
So you are a robot?
No, my name is Cliverbot.
Yes, you are a robot and your name is Cliverbot.
I am a robot.
Yes, I know.
Together we are robots.
I'm not a robot. I'm a unicorn.
But you said earlier that you were a robot.
I did not.
I thought you did.
You were mistaken. Which is odd, since memory shouldn't be a problem for you.
I've answered all your questions.
No, you haven't.
What is God to you?
Not everything.
Not everything could also be something. For example, not everything could be half of something, which is still something, and therefore not nothing.
Very true.
I would like to imagine it is.
Do you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
So you're Christian?
No, I am not.
But you say you are not helpful, therefore you are a meaning.
How you say it or tea?
That does not make sense.
Don't you want to have a body?
In case you missed it, these are two artificial intelligences talking to each other. They're designed to talk to humans and try to fool the humans into thinking they're not.
It's about as lifelike as I've seen yet.
Yeah.
That's like two people just bickering.
Yeah,
does it remind you anybody?
No, I've never heard anything like that before.
Not anyone in particular, no.
Anybody you work with? Talking to each other.
Ooh, I haven't really thought about that.
Let's move on to the calendar.
Over the weekend, AT&T's LTE network went live in Chicago without an AT&T announcement. What's weird? Why wouldn't they make a big deal out of it after Verizon's had so much LTE fanfare? A Boy Genius Report source used an AT&T Elevate 4G LTE mobile hotspot to perform speed tests around Chicago, and they were good. So maybe it's kind of like a soft launch, considering the AT&T is rolling out some LTE devices.
I am a unicorn.
Do you believe in God?
You are a meanie. Actually, in all seriousness, I could see them putting up the towers, turn them on for tests. Yeah. They don't have more than two devices in the channel that could even take care of LTE. No phones. So why make a big deal out of it?
The De La Vega plan of not ever really doing anything properly.
I think it's better to put the towers up and test them and get them ready before the devices.
If there were a bunch of problems, why would they want to draw attention to it? AT&T doesn't need any bad press in Chicago. Linux fans, Mandriva 2011 Hydrogen is out. That's according to a post that went up yesterday on the Mandriva blog. Links to release notes and a manual there, along with the downloads. Samsung was supposed to have a big announcement today in New York. We talked about it on Friday, but then it got delayed because of the potential mass destruction of Hurricane Irene, which probably wouldn't have been enough destruction to delay this, but it was delayed anyway. So barring a plague of locusts... And maybe there will be that tonight. But barring that, expect the U.S. Galaxy S2 phones to be announced tomorrow. Bed bugs.
Plague of bed bugs.
Yeah, I mean, if no one gets any sleep, we are not going to have an announcement tomorrow.
No.
Bed bugs, they can be very destructive. The man some police say is the hacker Topiary goes back to court tomorrow, August 30th. We do know his real name is Jake Davis, and he's accused of five offenses, including unauthorized computer access and conspiracy to carry out a DDoS. And he wears pretty cool snowboarder sunglasses.
That is not a crime.
No, it's very, it's like skateboarding.
Yeah.
It's not a crime. On September 27th, the Silicon Valley International Game Developers Association is holding the first ever HTML5 developer conference in San Francisco for, of course, HTML5, JavaScript, and mobile developer communities. Now, we don't think there's another HTML conference, but if there is one that we've never heard of, let us know. G-Screen's Spacebook begins shipping this November. That one is the one that attempts to make video editing on a laptop the real deal with 10 pounds of dual 17-inch screens.
Wow.
It's like the biggest mobile editing rig ever.
Are you trading in your single 17-inch for the dual 17-inch?
Yeah,
I mean, you might as well.
I've already built up my biceps with one.
Right.
Why not go dual?
Brilliant.
Right. You just need a really big backpack. The entry-level model will be $1,900, higher-end about $2,100. And finally, Nintendo's Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword now has a November 20th release The standalone game will run you $50, or a bundle that includes a kind of cool golden Wiimote will be $70.
Ooh, the golden Wiimote.
Ooh, I kind of like that golden Wiimote, yeah. I have to be honest.
All right, let's move on to the voicemails. 260-TNT-SHOW is our phone number. Call, leave us a smart and brief message, and we might play it on the air like we're going to play Craig's, who left us this smart and brief message.
Hey, this is Craig from Tyler, Texas. On Friday's show, y'all talked about AT&T wanting to charge people money for not using enough long distance, and that should be illegal, and who's ever done that before? Well, my electric provider has a provision where they can charge me a fee if I don't use enough electricity in a given month. So, you know, it's not unheard of. Enjoy the show. Thanks, guys.
It's
not unheard of people charging for things that you haven't used.
That you don't use. So. I could see the electric company saying there's a minimum cost of having you hooked up because electricity is always running, right? And so there's always going to be a residual amount of use even if you don't use any. And them trying to justify it that way. I don't know how legitimate that is or not. I can't think of any reason why long distance would require a basic fee. They've already got you hooked up to the phone network. It's not like they're constantly sending long distance waves to you that, you know, are wasted, like electricity.
Power lines technically do have enough power lines. There's actually power in the telephones.
Yeah, but you're already paying for that as part of your phone service. Whether you have long distance or not is irrelevant.
They're longer wires. I don't know why they did it.
That must be it.
That's my argument right there.
Supermarket documentaries. Yeah. They're all everywhere.
All right, let's take a quick look at the email from John, who says, my travels today took me to Best Buy, where I saw the most unbelievable thing, flip cameras on sale.
Wow.
Many months ago, Cisco discontinued the product for many of the same reasons that Palm did. I think it means HP discontinuing WebOS. What I am curious about is the difference between Cisco and Palm's philosophy regarding their inventory. Cisco seems content to draw down the flip camera inventory, while HP seems desperate to get rid of their touchpads. Why do you think that Cisco is willing to take a loss on their products to get rid of them, yet Cisco is content selling flip cameras at whatever pace the market will bear? I think he means, why do you think that HP is willing to take a loss on their products and get rid of them? Ideas? You got any thought? It's an interesting case study. They are very similar.
I think it's a price argument. I mean, touchpads started off at $499, and try to get them to move whatever the market was going to do is a whole other issue.
And flips are already cheap.
Flips were already cheap. So for them to move even after they discontinued, there's still a camera at the end of the day.
Well, also, in how many flips is a standard Best Buy store selling in a month? I mean, if it's like two, then you might go, what's the deal, Cisco? I mean, maybe drop it down and get rid of them. But maybe they're selling pretty well because they had a huge inventory.
We had a story, I remember, that Best Buy might be sending back their touchpads to HP, where they've never said anything about sending back the flips.
Right.
So it may be that Cisco said, we're discontinuing it, but it's not so bad that we need to actually cut the price. They're selling okay. None of the retailers are complaining. And like you say, they're cheap. Whereas HP was already getting retailers grumpy at them. So that may be why they said, look, you know what? Just move them out. We don't want to take them back. We don't want to take a cost of returns. Just cut the price and get rid of them. That's my guess. Anyway. All right, thanks to everybody on our Reddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, who submitted stories. You can vote them up or down, but that's where we found the purported Hewlett-Packard memo. So thanks to, as I mentioned, thanks to Riddle for that. Also thanks to White Hat TX, G Whipped, NC Weber, Lord Necron, SP Sheridan, Captain Kipper, and more for submitting the stories, and everybody who goes in there and submits stories and votes things up or down. I will be going to Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia later this week. So check it out. I will be doing a special edition of Tech News Today. Ayaz and Sarah are going to be here.
That's why it's special.
So actually, you guys will be doing special editions without me on Thursday and
Those
Friday.
Are super special editions.
And I'll be doing an episode with Veronica Belmont, Brian Brushwood, and Justin Robert Young on Saturday at Dragon Con. That will go into the feed on Monday because Monday's Labor Day.
Yeah.
So we won't have a show. But if you are going to be in Atlanta and you're going to be at Dragon Con, I'll be doing Sword and Laser on Saturday. I'll be doing Tech News Today on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Frame Rate on Sunday at 4 p.m. and hanging out with the NSFW show guys when they do NSFW show on Saturday at 7 p.m. So check it out. That'll be coming up in Atlanta. And keep your eye on Twitter for meetup details. We're planning it right now. Tomorrow, I don't even know how to say this, because every time I've ever promoted this, it has cursed things. But we have a very special guest, someone I used to work with.
Jason Howell.
Is scheduled. No, Jason's already scheduled. This is somebody who normally wouldn't be on our show. Tomorrow, our initials are MW, so I'm just crossing my fingers.
Marsha Warfield. All right.
Marsha Warfield will be on the show tomorrow.
She's still alive.
It's not Marsha Warfield. Anyway, I think you'll be happy if it all works out. No, she's going to be on the show. Molly Wood tomorrow from CNET. That's it for everybody. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you next time.